So we're starting the interview now with Shulamit Oppenheim.
So I'll hit you with the first question, Ms. Oppenheim. So when and how did you first meet Carl Lowenstein?
We met Carl when we came here. That was in 1961.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, my husband actually was centered at UMass in the government department, but he also taught a number of courses at Amherst. And actually, for whatever reason, our closest friends and our life revolved, has stayed much more here than across the, it's not across the valley, but at UMass. So we met him already when we first came,
mm-hmm.
and we became friends, and he and I used to spend time in the bird sanctuary together. We would take walks.
Yeah, it's a lovely place.
Yeah, that's right. But he and my husband found many things of interest. They didn't agree on most things, especially not on music, not on art. Carl was very, very Germanic. And my husband, though born in Frankfurt, but of a Belgian mother,
mm-hmm.
and always, at that time, which is interesting, you could take citizenship of your mother.
Mm-hmm.
He took Belgian citizenship. French really was the tongue that my mother-in-law spoke to him. And so Felix was really a Frenchman. And Carl was a Prussian. Carl, he was one of those very, very assimilated Jews, more German than, well, you didn't have to be that, it wasn't all or nothing, it's just that he was a German first, and although he felt, as you all know from everything that you've looked at, I'm sure the material that you've come over,
mm-hmm.
that I have never seen, he certainly was as anti-everything as happening as anyone could be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there was always that, he would tease Felix about, yes, but then there's you had a very thick German accent, there's always your Belgian mother that comes between us. when they would have arguments and so on. With me, he shared his life as a man. He loved women.
Oh.
He was, you could easily say, he was a womanizer, very much so. And I guess he felt free enough with me to tell me all the stories of his romances through his life.
Do you have any that stand out in particular?
Oh, you mean any incidents? I don't know. They all seem to be the same.
Oh.
You know, he was very attracted to beautiful women, and he had many affairs.
Mm.
I cannot remember if he. I think he was married before he married Piri. I think this was his second marriage.
Mm.
I'm not sure. But I don't know, did you find anything in the material that you looked at spoke of a first, any marriage besides to his Hungarian?
No, we
wife?
Just noticed the lack of mention of Peroska Piri in his diary, and we were kind of wondering about that. We weren't sure if he was really in love with his wife or not, but
I don't know if Carl could ever have been in love with anyone but himself, I have to say, as I remember him. It made him quite amusing, and he didn't mind if I had his number, and I did. And I would tease him very much about this fact. Mm-hmm. I think he had a good vision of himself, but it was very much Carl. Yeah. And as he told me the story of meeting Piri, he met her on a train. She evidently was a very striking, and she still was when I met her, when we met her, striking, very tall, red-headed Hungarian, very strong-minded, also very sure of herself. I think that's the only kind of woman that would have stayed with Carl, would have been able to stay with him, frankly. But that's interesting that in the material that you found in the diaries, you didn't find
not much.
There was hardly any mention of her.
Mention of her. Mm-hmm. They entertained a great deal. She was a marvelous cook, and Hungarian cooking was then. And we were there, I would say, for dinners at least once every few weeks. And the tradition came that we celebrated New Year's with them and with others. The years passed that way. So on that level, I certainly saw him socially, But we did talk about art and about music. And, he was very much for the heavy Wagnerian, Parsifalian type of music, and also naturalistic art. He felt that he wasn't too keen on the French, let's put it this way. And he felt that it was effete, Monet was effete. All of the Impressionists were effete compared to the German naturalistic art itself. So these were the kind of discussions that would go on all the time, again and again and again, in the bird sanctuary. I think he would have been much happier to have been in Europe. Yeah. I think you're right. Yeah. He never specifically singled out anyone, let's say, in the department as a problem for him. But you knew that he remained a German. And he was here by the grace of being able to be a political refugee, just like my husband, in that sense. So I think that's very legitimate, what came. Yeah. You could feel that his sights were always elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did he ever consider moving back to Germany after World War II? Or?
Well, I don't think he felt he had to have a position.
Yeah.
And he was well established here. But you know what I can't remember? Did they go back to Germany when he retired? I don't think so. No, I think they stayed in the house on Sunset. Yeah. Yeah. Until he died.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. So, in the diary, he comes across as being a little bit self-important and cantankerous, but we were wondering if you could tell us some of his more positive qualities, if you can think of any.
Well, I think probably one of his most endearing qualities was his loyalty to those that he cared about. You could feel that he was a fighter, basically. And I think that was one of the things that drew me to him as a person, because I have to say that my husband, whether that's a European trait or whatever it is, had similar qualities of that, but very loyal. And that would be one of the most endearing and very special qualities. But there was something, I have to say, now that I'm thinking about it, you know, it's been so many years since I've thought about Carl and those times together. His self-centeredness was very endearing. Mm-hmm. No, it was not... it didn't have a full arrogance to it. It was very organic, mm-hmm. You know? It was Carl. And that was endearing. His self-centeredness came out of his center, and he was very loyal to himself, and I found that very 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 endearing, and he obviously was, I have to say, fond of me, so. He would call me up in the morning and ask, would you like to go for a walk in the bird sanctuary? It's beautiful today, Shulamit. And even in the weather, he was like Gödel, a famous scientist, you know, and we knew well in Princeton. Gödel, in the middle of summer, this weather, he'd have on a long overcoat with a slouch hat. And there we would walk in this. And I remember... Yes, it comes back to me. All of a sudden, we were walking in our path, and he stopped stark still, and he looked at me, and he said, you know, I am at the height of my technique. And I said to him, what kind of technique are you talking about? And he knew exactly what I was referring to, and he burst into laughter. He said, because for him, everything turned sexual. I am at the height of my technique. And there he was in this long overcoat, down to his ankles with this slouch hat on, and this marvelous nasal, this nose he had, which I figure it looked like Falstaff. Every time I would look at him, I would think of the, you know, naso ardentissimo, as they say in the opera. And there he was. So I think that's what he was referring to. Now, whether that was a come on, I don't know. We never got any further than that. That's for sure.
He didn't talk very much about his time overseas in Germany?
No.
Okay.
No.
Growing up? Did you talk about that at all?
No. No. It was very much of the present, mm-hmm. And if it was the past, it was the women.
Can you say anything more about that? Or do you want to?
Yeah, do you have any?
No, I would tell you all. No, no, no.
Let's hear more.
No, so. That's as much as I...
Not too scandalous.
All I know is that probably the most telling and the most revealing was when he stopped and said he was at the height of his technique. That he was telling me something, obviously. And I think that Piri was very much aware of that. Mm-hmm. It wasn't easy for her. Yeah. But she took it all with dignity, very dignified woman. I was very fond of her. And caring also to her friends, very well liked at Amherst, mm-hmm. by everyone. I think everyone knew that Carl wasn't easy. And so the feeling was to be married to him, you know, and to keep yourself as poised and active as she was, was a tribute to her as a person.
Is there any reason why they didn't have children? Or
they didn't want either of them. Mm-hmm. I know that, Carl.
Do you know why they didn't?
didn't want any.
Do you think he just wanted to focus on himself and his work?
Yeah, I don't think that. Well, I think that he married when he finally settled down with Peely. She was older, he was older, she'd been married before, but I never heard a word about children from her side, and I know that he, I don't think he felt he would have made a very good father. He was too involved in what he was doing, and he knew that you can't be totally if you're going to be an active and involved father, right?
Karl Lowenstein was German, and his wife was from Hungary. I was just wondering, like, did they speak English in the house? Like, did you get a sense of what they...
As far as I knew, they spoke English.
Where did they meet on that train? Do you know where they met? Was it still in Europe?
Yeah. Yeah. They met in Europe. She was on the train. He sat down next to her.
Just like that.
Good-looking woman. You could almost take the line out of Jane Eyre, you know, reader, I married him. That's just what happened. I think that's the way it happened for Peely. She was overwhelmed by him.
Wow.
And he could be, was
so
charming.
How was he charming? In other words, what was it about him that was charming besides his love for himself?
How tall was he?
He had a charisma.
Okay.
Confidence.
He was very cultured. He knew how to charm a woman.
Did he have a good sense of humor?
He had a sense of humor.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah,
he did. He had a sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And I could easily see that a woman could be very taken with him. Yeah. I guess you don't have to be an Adonis or an Apollo to to be a womanizer.
This is interesting because I've just never thought of Karl Lowenstein as being this like Casanova.
Well,
I mean, you don't get that from his diary, so.
Well, that's why I'm here,
yeah.
To tell you that he was.
Yeah, because he only writes by his interaction with other men, so it's very interesting to see.
Well, he obviously kept that as his private life, or when he walked with me in the bird sanctuary. Very much so.
Yeah. Did they have a lot of friends in Amherst? I mean, were you part of a small group of friends, or did they socialize a lot?
It was a small group,
mm-hmm.
but they socialized a lot.
Yeah.
Peely loved to cook, she loved to entertain, and so there were dinners very often.
And were they quite formal? I mean, was it sort of a European house? Or
I wouldn't say they were formal, but the table was set the way I was taught to set it up.
Did they drink quite a bit? I mean,
wines,
in a social sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wines,
yeah.
Good wines were important for Karl.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yes. But it was impossible not to be down nose like he had.
And do you have a sense of sort of his daily routine? Like you say, you often walked with him in the bird sanctuary. Did that happen in the morning or in the afternoon? Or did he like write in the morning or write late at night?
It depended on our schedule.
Okay.
whether I was busy. I mean, I still had, when we came to Amherst, my children were 7, 9, 11. So I still had, even though I did radio programs for NPR, which were recorded at WFCR and then sent to NPR. That was, so it would be, you know, he would call me up in the morning and ask what I was doing.
And besides the dinner parties and the walks, did you do other things together, or not so much? Or did the couples do other things together?
Not really. No.
You never traveled together?
No.
Mm-hmm.
No, nothing like that. Traveled with others from here.
Mm-hmm.
whose names are still floating around. Like Jeff Carr, who was the head of the Women's Languages Department, and many others that aren't here now. I'm trying to think, did we... Well, you see, musically, he, as I say, he was a heavy hitter. Wagner and Mahler and Berlioz and those types. And we were 18th century Mozart and Haydn and Handel and Schumann and Ravel later on and Debussy and so on. So we never ended up at concerts together. I think that he felt that it wasn't his world. And that might have been why he became such a strong voter for himself, in a sense, that he needed that because otherwise this was going on too. What you've described to me, and I think that would help describe Carl as I knew him. He was in conflict. He was probably a very conflicted man, if this is what he wrote in his diary, and yet this is what came out to myself and to others. I think others who knew him would be as astonished by that as I am. Except the one aspect was, it wasn't the world that he would have liked to have seen.
Do you have an idea of what kind of world he did want to see?
Well, a world where what had happened during the Second World War had not happened. Not just for the Jews and the gypsies and the homosexuals, but just in general. Yeah. I think he was very conflicted, and he was very mixed, because on the one hand, you would call him, I would call him very European. He loved Switzerland. They would go to the Alps. Did this come out in his diaries? Was there anything about their times in the Alps?
He tried to go to the Alps, yeah. But they wouldn't. I think they wouldn't give him leave.
The American occupation authorities wouldn't give him leave for that year that he was there.
Oh, but
he only writes the diary that one year.
Oh,
and otherwise he wrote a set of memoirs, but he didn't. The diary is only this one year.
I see, because I know that they went on vacations to Switzerland. Yes.
And not to Germany? Was that on purpose? Did they go to Germany too on vacation?
I don't think so.
It was to Switzerland, didn't it?
They went to Switzerland, maybe. Yeah. And maybe to Hungary, to Pili's family or something.
Did Lowenstein have any family that he ever talked about?
No.
No. I mean, it was just he and Piri and no one else. Did they have pets?
Did they have a cat? I think they had a cat.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a very, very kind of, it's a strange sort of, in some ways very isolated.
Well, I think there was. I think there was that element. There again, his life as well as his personality was such a mix. And such a,
with
every end of the, from the spectrum. And now that you tell me about the diary that I didn't know anything about, and his complaints, and his illnesses, and so on, it just intensifies the view of him being a very conflicted man. And I don't think that happy. I don't think he was a happy man. No. He enjoyed things.
Yeah.
He loved a good dinner. And a good wine and a good conversation. And evidently walking in the bird sanctuary. But he wasn't happy. No. That I sensed.
I'm still a little unclear on the conflicted nature of Karl Lowenstein. What were the conflicting thoughts going on inside him, you think? Or why did he feel unfulfilled or mixed?
Well, I think, and this is a guess, I think that leaving Germany for him was a major hit in his life. Now, for my husband, it wasn't. It was much more French, and for many Jews, it wasn't. But for Karl, and that's the conflict of seeing what happened in Germany to his beloved Germany. And my father-in-law had an element of that. I think that generation, because my father-in-law would be born about the same time as he was, and that he was conflicted, that he knew he had to leave, but I don't think he wanted to. He knew he had to put down roots here, but I don't think he really wanted to or could or felt that there was enough in this soil that could help him root, to stay with the metaphor. And that's what I meant by conflict. Does that help?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Did he sort of look down on American culture?
Oh, yes.
Or, okay.
I look down on just about everything.
Yeah. Or perhaps if he had stayed on the Yale faculty, he would have felt more fulfilled? Or do you think no matter what, he would have been unhappy?
That's
here?
Interesting, because I don't know, why did he leave Yale?
Well,
no,
he
wasn't
no
given.
Job.
Yeah,
oh,
I mean,
he wasn't given.
Wasn't continued.
No, it was just something
right.
to keep him safe
right.
for a while.
Right.
And then the offer for Amherst came,
yep.
and so he took, as you know, the best he could. That was it. Yeah. Yeah.
So after, you know, his time in Germany and then, you know, meeting you, your husband, he never mentioned, like, did he ever mention wanting to go back to Germany?
Maybe I think if we follow his feelings about the denazification that wasn't strong enough, that didn't go the way he wanted, I don't think it was a Germany that he wanted to go back to. What would you say that?
I could believe that, actually, yeah.
Yeah, and that too left him with conflict, you know? He felt very German. He loved everything about it. And in the, you know, its cultural aspects, and was one of those German Jews who, like my father-in-law, I have to say, couldn't believe that something like this happened. A country that gave us Brahms and that gave us Schumann, and that, you know, how could something like that be? And they never reconciled to it. Yeah. Never.